We start hour number two. Welcome to the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. That's where I live and work. I host this show from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day, but not for much longer, because this studio transforms into a brand new studio, which has television capabilities, because this show is going to be aired on TV starting on January 2nd on CBS Sports Network. Find out whether or not your system has CBS Sports Network. If you don't have it, find it. If you want to watch The Jungle, 3 hours live every single day, Monday through Friday, starting on January 2nd, 2018. Coming up in about 20 minutes, Bruce Feldman joins us to talk some college football. Next hour, Sam Amick, an NBA insider for USA Today. I am not in tomorrow. Joey Vendetta is. So make sure you check out Joe. Because I'm not in tomorrow, Alvy likes to pick me up on a short week with the week that was or the 4 days that were. So we'll have that later on, too. In the meantime, spent a lot of time talking about the Lakers and Sixers last night. I still want to get to UCLA. And again, what punishment fits that crime? UCLA is trying to determine what it is. Nick Saban getting nice, as only Nick Saban can. Normally this time of year, this guy is hot, bent, uptight, angry, irritable. Not now. Showed up in a totally different way yesterday. And I can reset that for you later on. But right now, we're talking Wichita State basketball. We're joined by the head basketball coach at Wichita State in his 11th year there. 2014 National Coach of the Year, a seven-time Conference Coach of the Year. He led Wichita State to six straight NCAA tournament appearances, including the Final Four. They're 2-0, they're number six in the AP poll, and they're at Cal on Monday. Greg Marshall is my guest. Greg, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I thought you were talking about me there, being bent and irritable.
Nope. Never. I'd never say that about you, ever. I was talking about Nick Saban. Greg, but as always, listen, there's so many things I want to hit on with you, your program, your players, but before we get into any of that, how is life and what was your summer like?
Well, everything is really good, Jim. Everything is perfect, actually, with the exception of doing a little rehab on a shoulder surgery. I've been over 12 weeks now with a torn rotator cuff and a shredded labrum, so that is not fun. I say avoid it if at all possible. Stay young.
I was going to say, avoid the surgery or avoid ripping your arm out of its socket.
Both. Right. No, really, it's been a grind, man. I had to put the golf clubs up early this fall, and it's a shame because my wife has really started to play. So we've had a beautiful fall here, but I've been the caddy. I've been driving the golf cart.
I got you. So how far into the rehab are you? Are you almost done?
No, it's I'm over 12 weeks now post-surgery. The surgery was on the day of the eclipse, August the 21st. I was a little worried that the doctors and the nurses might leave my surgery and run out to check out the eclipse, but everything went pretty well, I think. The doctors are pleased, and the first 6 weeks you're in a sling, and then the painkillers wear off, you kind of wean off those things, and it's a grind, man. It's a year to a year and a half, they say, before you're 100%, but 6 months, I should be very, very good. So, and right now, it's hard to tell if you don't know that I had shoulder surgery.
Good. Greg Marshall joining us. All right, then. You beat College of Charleston 81-63 on Monday night. It's a game where you went up against Earl Grant, who was an assistant with you for 6 years. What's it like when you go up against one of your former assistants?
It's not fun. I did not enjoy that. I don't know why we played the game, honestly. I knew that they were going to be really good. They played without one of their better players, Jarrell Brantley, so that probably had a big effect on them. Earl Grant's one of the rising stars in this business. He's taken his fourth year. This is his best College of Charleston team. They won 25 last year, and they're picked to win the Colonial Athletic Conference this year. So I was very pleased to get out of there with an 18-point win. I studied quite a lot of film because I knew Earl and my former point guard, as well as my former graduate assistant, Matt Breyer, is on his staff. So they knew our stuff inside and out. We weren't going to trick them or fool them, so we just had to out-execute them.
Greg Marshall joining us. All right, so Monday's game was also your 353rd game as the head coach of Wichita State. That ties you with Ralph Miller for most in school history. It's a really big number, and it's one that you don't get to without a lot of success. So what does that number mean to you?
Well, it first of all, Ralph Miller is one of the all-time greats. I mean, the guy had Oregon State number one in the country back in the 80s, I think, and he was also good at Iowa after leaving Wichita State. He was the career leader in wins for a long time here at Wichita State. So it's awesome to be included in a sentence with Coach Miller, but it also just means that I'm getting really old, Jim.
Yeah, that not really old, just a little bit older. You want old, Greg. I'll tell you old. I interviewed Ralph Miller. I can remember when I got my career started that he was one of the guys that I put on my demo tape because I was so proud of talking to Ralph Miller and that he didn't chew me up and spit me out. So if you feel old, how about that? I interviewed that guy when I got into the business.
Ralph Miller was a dude. He was so tough.
He was.
And he started his career here at in high school in Wichita and ultimately had that program in the 60s as being one of the top programs in the country. And then he had a great career. Wherever he went, wins, plentiful wins soon followed.
Greg Marshall, my guest. All right, you and I are on the same page with him. Now, I wouldn't spend the whole interview talking about great moments from the past because you've got a loaded team that's got the potential for some great moments this season. But if you were to take me back to January of 2009 for just one moment, Creighton comes to town. You were 11-20 the season before. You had just dropped six games in a row, but you were playing in front of a blackout crowd and you crushed Creighton on the glass and you won that game. How big was that game for you and the program?
I think that was a turning point, Jim. I honestly believe we were not going anywhere in a hurry. And 0-6, we had just gone to Missouri State and gotten blown out. And I had met with my team for a long time in the locker room after the game and just a real heart-to-heart, man. I let everybody talk, and I said, what is going on? We should be better than this. And, you know, there was a full litany of excuses and all that, but we come back, and a testament to this program and this fan base, because the next game being 0-6, and as you mentioned, only winning 11 games in our first season, I'm thinking they're getting ready to boo us and run us out of town on a rail. Instead, the place is packed to the gills. Everyone's wearing black. The Shockers respond, and we end up really doing great things the rest of the year. And finishing 17-17 and got a cup of coffee and I think the CBI that year. So that was a real turning point. And from that point forward, it's been NIT championship and six straight NCAA tournament appearances.
Yeah, I mean, how about that? If you and I were talking before that game in 09, and I told you in a couple of years you'd win the NIT, you'd go to the NCAA Final Four, that you'd be one of the best programs in the country year in and year out, what would you have said to me then?
Well, I would have said, you know, I want to see your world through your glasses because they're very rose-colored glasses, man. You're feeling yourself. I just don't know how that's going to happen, but with diligence and strong work ethic and just getting the right type of guys in here that allow us to coach them, and they all have this talent that just needs to be uncovered and shined up, and then these guys become pros, they become graduates, and they become champions.
Greg Marshall joining us, Wichita State head coach. And I would imagine you would tell me that one of those guys is Landry Shamet. He dealt with that foot injury over the summer, but he had 17 in the opener, and then he had 10 against the College of Charleston. What do you make of how he's shown up in the first two games, and what kind of a year do you expect him to have?
Oh, it's really amazing because this kid's worked really hard. It's his second foot surgery. 2 years ago, he redshirted when Ron and Fred were seniors. He would have really been a big help for us to make a even deeper run that year, but we elected to redshirt him. Last year as a redshirt freshman, he burst onto the scene late in the season. It was tremendous in the NCAA tournament, especially against Kentucky. And then this year, he has to deal with it again. But he's rehabbed. The foot is healed. It's still a little bit of atrophy going on, and the ankle's kind of sore. But the actual screw of where it was put into the foot is 100% solid, and he's going to be a great player. Right now, he's not 100%. He's out there manning up and doing what he can, but he's going to be a pro eventually, and I don't know when that's going to be. It could be sooner rather than later. I don't know. But as long as we have him, it's just an honor to coach him because he does things the right way, and he's so easy and fun to coach.
Well, and on top of that, there's nothing wrong. He may have an issue with the foot still, or at least it might not be 100%, as you point out. Nothing wrong with this kid's heart. Nothing wrong with his head. Going into the tournament last year against Kentucky, he said, quote, "I'm tired of people thinking that we're some punks like we can't play. We show up every day. Our record speaks for itself. We beat good teams. We compete. We do all this stuff, and we're just as good, if not better, than everybody we play against." Look, I would imagine you always want to have a chip on your shoulder, but at the same time, do you feel like you're done proving yourselves to everybody else, that you've done enough that you no longer have to do that?
Nah, Jim, in this business, I think you have to prove yourself every time out. I really do. It's my coaching mentor, John Kress from the College of Charleston, had an expression, "Proud peacock one day, feather duster the next." And you're only as good as your last performance. And you've got to, whether you're College of Charleston, Wichita State, or Kansas, you've got to go out every night and perform and prove, you know, that you can do it at a very high level. And we're right up there with the Redwoods now. I mean, we're dealing with the big boys, and we're excited about this challenge we have upcoming in Maui, the Maui Invitational. And we have Cal on Monday. If we win or lose, we're going to play VCU or Marquette. And then you've got Michigan and Notre Dame and LSU and those type guys on the other side. So there should be some great basketball being played on the island. And hopefully you guys will get a chance to tune in.
You're not playing. You're not messing around. And I want to make the point that since that Final Four run, you've beaten Indiana, Kansas, Arizona in the tournament, all the bluest of the blue bloods. So it says a ton about the program. Listen, Greg, one last thought. It's been a tough, tough offseason for the sport of college basketball overall. What's been your reaction as you've watched it all unfold and play out?
Well, you know, I've been in this business 33 years, Jim, so you know there's some stuff going on. You just don't know how or who or – but now when the FBI gets involved and you know, people could actually go to jail, it's a wake-up call. To be honest, I'm kind of glad. I don't want to see anyone go to jail. I really don't. I want them out of our game if that's what they're doing. But I want to see the playing field leveled. You know, it's almost like there should be a championship for those who do and a championship for those who don't. And it's just ridiculous that people are doing this they're trying to enrich themselves and make money off the backs of kids. And it's ugly. And I hate it. But you know what? There's bad people in every profession. And unfortunately, ours is public right now, but there's a ton of people that do it right. And you know, every day they're improving the lives of the young people that they work with and coach. So just, I know there's a lot of negativity right now and with what's going on with the UCLA thing and whatnot, but honestly, our guys aren't perfect, and I'm not perfect, but I tell you what, it'd be hard for you to find a group of young men, 17 young men with higher character as a group than what we have in that locker room.
Wichita State is 2-0. They're number 6 in the AP poll, and they're going up against Cal on Monday night. Their head coach, Greg Marshall, obviously always one of the first guys I run down at the start of the college basketball season. Greg, it's great to have you back on. Good luck rehabbing that wing, and I know you and I will do it again before the end of the season, and I will look forward to it.
Absolutely, and check us out, man. We're on 26 times nationally this year, so watch us.
That's great. I love that. Greg Marshall, my guest. All right, Greg, thanks so much. 26 times they're on this year. So watch us is right. Listen, if you haven't watched them, at this point, there can't be anybody who's a college basketball fan who doesn't know about that program, doesn't know about that coach, doesn't know how they go about it. But you should watch them. These guys play hard, always. They play angry, always. And they're loaded, again. When we come back, we switch up. We talk college football. Bruce Feldman is my guest. Shocker Nation, if you want to react to what you just heard, you go right ahead. You know where to find me.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Quick note for you. You holiday shop online, but crooks holiday shop on your porch. Cops. Gotta love that. These guys are the best. Cops call them package pirates. Stop the package pirates. Yeah, cops call them package pirates. I call them scumbags. Stop the package pirates. Stop the scumbags this holiday season by getting Blink home security camera. Visit blinkbeforeyoubuy.com/Rome. Get 10% off today. Make a note of that. blinkbeforeyoubuy.com/Rome. It's a great product. Really good product. Right now, we are joined by a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, a writer for Sports Illustrated, the author of The Quarterback. We got to talk some college football with Bruce Feldman. Bruce, good to have you back. How are you? Great to have you, Bruce. Thanks so much. Let me start first with Tennessee. As you reported earlier this week, Bruce, Butch Jones is out. I mean, ultimately, given how things started for him there and the fact that it looked like he had things turned around, why do you think it didn't work out for Jones at Tennessee?
You know, it was one of those where I think he took over a big mess and he built it up. But ultimately, last year, the 2016 season was his chance, you know, to have the breakthrough. And it didn't happen. You know, they had some injuries. I just think that also some of the hires he'd made, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think they just ultimately were pretty underwhelming. And then it seemed like kind of the harder Butch tried to kind of combat the narrative, I think the worse things kind of became. And it was almost like, you know, quicksand, where the more you fight it, the faster you go down. And I really think that's what was it. He came into this year, everybody knew he was on the hot seat. He had a pretty young team, and they didn't respond too well to the pressure, and then things just seemed like they imploded from there.
Bruce Feldman joining us. Now, if we're talking about an opening at Tennessee, then that means, Bruce, that we're going to have to talk about John Gruden at some point, so we might as well get it over with right now. Based on what you've heard, how likely is it that he would take over in Knoxville? Is there any chance that could happen?
I mean, I think there's some volunteer boosters who are going to try to throw a lot of money at him. But, Jim, he's already making a ton of money, and he's also got a big endorsement deal, and he's never been a college head coach. So, you know, I'm wondering, does John Gruden, with the setup he has, A, does he want to get back into coaching, and B, does he want to get into coaching at this level where you have to wrestle with things like the 20-hour rule and different things where, you know, your off season is you're constantly basically checking your phone to deal with recruiting because some kid is in town and wants to take an unofficial visit, or somebody gets in trouble, or just a lot of the kind of annoying things that really don't have that much to do with actually coaching football as he knows it. And by the way, you know, he spent a lot of time with Butch Jones over the last few years, so I think he's pretty versed with not only the positives that go with coaching in Tennessee, but also probably some of the headaches too.
Yeah, I just don't see it personally. I really don't. Now, what about Chip Kelly? His name has also come up. Could you see him returning to college football and doing it sooner as opposed to later?
I could definitely see that. You know, he had a ton of success. He was 46-7 in 4 years at Oregon. He was as innovative as any coach that we have seen in college football in a long time, not just with his offensive system, but a lot of the ways in terms of performance and training habits and the things he was able to help bring to Oregon. So I think there's a good chance he could come back. It's just where is going to be the ideal fit. I could see University of Florida being very interested in him. The question's going to be, you know, what's the fit for him? Just knowing him a little bit, I know that he's going to want to go somewhere where he feels, you know what, do my bosses treat people the right way? Do I feel like I can work with these guys? So there's got to be a support and commitment, but also I don't think he's going to want to go to somewhere where the head coach becomes some kind of celebrity where everybody's in your business and they're looking at every possible thing and there's a lot of other fishbowl aspect of it. Now, there's less of that aspect at Florida than there would be at Tennessee, but there's still quite a bit of it when you're the head coach of University of Florida in the SEC. If one of these other jobs in the Pac-12 opened up, I could see that. You know, I could certainly see him as a fit at a UCLA or Arizona State if they had a coaching change. But if they did decide to go in those directions, both of those schools would have to pay a lot of money to get out of their current head coaches. The one big positive beyond just Kelly's system and everything he would bring with him is you would probably get him at a cut rate because, remember, he's still getting paid a lot by the San Francisco 49ers.
Bruce Feldman joining us. All right, that's well said. So you've got Tennessee with an opening. You've got Florida with an opening. Then you've got Dan Mullen, who is an assistant at Florida, and he's accomplished some amazing things at Mississippi State. But could you see him leaving there for either Florida or Tennessee if they come for him?
I could. You know, as you mentioned, he was not only an assistant under Urban Meyer at Florida, but his old boss, the AD at Mississippi State, Scott Strickland, he's now the AD at Florida. They have a good relationship. The curious part of this thing with Dan Mullen is he's done a terrific job at Mississippi State. That's the hardest job in the SEC West resources-wise. They're now paying him $4.5 million a year. That's a lot of money. I think Tennessee, if Florida doesn't want him, I think Tennessee could pay him, you know, $6.5 million to get him. He knows the SEC. He's a really good offensive coach. He's shown time and time again now he knows how to develop quarterbacks if you look at his track record. That's a big piece in this. The question is, yes, Tennessee is a better job, and certainly Florida is a much better job than what he has at Mississippi State. You have a better chance to compete for a national title there. But if you go 8-4 at Mississippi State, remember, in the last 5 years, he's averaged a little less than 8 wins a season. You do that in Starkville, Mississippi, they're going to love it. You do that in Knoxville for a couple of years in a row, and they're going to get tired of you. I mean, remember, Butch Jones had back-to-back 9-4 seasons in year 3 and year 4 coming into this year, and they couldn't wait to get rid of him.
You know, Bruce, you have all that, and then you've got a guy like Scott Frost, and his name is getting a lot of run based on what he's done at UCF, and because we have so many listeners in Nebraska, this comes up every single day on this show. In the event that that Nebraska job does open up, how likely is it that Frost were to go there? And I hate to even say this, but because it seems like sacrilege, could he do better than Nebraska?
Well, I think that's in the question of how the people in Gainesville feel right now about him. I mean, he's had a ton of success. He took over a program that was basically just completely dormant. They were almost dead last in the country in offense, and now they're number one in the country in offense. Yeah, he is a Chip Kelly protege. He obviously has big Nebraska ties, having been a player there and being from there. What I wonder about is, and let's say, you know, he's still very well thought of and close to Tom Osborne, who's kind of the godfather of Nebraska football. If you look at that situation, does he say, you know what, I love Nebraska, yet at the same time, I don't know if I have as good a chance to compete for national titles there because it's harder to recruit and get the kind of speed I need for my system around Nebraska. Now, it's on the favorable side of the Big Ten and the Big Ten West, which is much easier. It's basically Wisconsin and nothing else going on there. But if you're at Florida, you're surrounded with all this talent. So I don't know. And same thing, Tennessee has a stronger recruiting base than Nebraska does. So it's just a matter of what he's going to want to do. I had heard that Nebraska was looking to make a big, big financial offer to him. But, you know, we're going to see how this is going to play out. They have a new AD, Bill Moose, who came from Washington State, had hired Mike Leach there as definitely an outside-the-box thinker. I think Scott Frost would be a home run hire if they could get him at Nebraska, but I think right now it's just a big if.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman for another moment or so. You mentioned the Big Ten, so let me ask you this. You were working the Michigan State-Ohio State game on Saturday. How do you explain the fact, Bruce, that the Buckeyes can beat Penn State 1 week, get smashed by Iowa the next, and then trounce Michigan State the week after that?
The best explanation I got, Jim, is that, you know, there are 19- and 20-year-old kids, and I think sometimes their focus is just not always where it needs to be because you got these emotional roller coasters. I think Iowa's really well coached. They have some talent. You know, Nate Stanley's a good young quarterback, but I think if you're – and they did, to their credit, they did do some things that Ohio State had not seen defensively, and they didn't adjust to them well. But I think more than that, I think the Buckeye players thought, hey, we got an unranked Iowa team coming in here. They looked and saw they were pretty underwhelming just in terms of what their product had been on the field this year. And there was a natural letdown coming from the rally against Penn State and Saquon Barkley. And all of a sudden they went in there, and I think they realized how physical Iowa can be, how well coached they are. And they realized they got athletes too. And before it was too late, they couldn't flip the switch. Whereas when they came in against Michigan State, it was a little bit the opposite. Michigan State was riding this emotional crest. You know, we had their game the week before against Penn State. It was a, you know, 7-hour game because of the weather delays. They went on the last second field goal. They're a young team. They went into Columbus. The Buckeyes punched him in the face a couple of times, and and Michigan State looked really young and in over their head, and that was that.
A reporter, another critical weekend coming up just now, a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, a writer for Sports Illustrated, also the author of The Quarterback, Bruce Feldman, our guest. Bruce, great job. Great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Bruce Feldman, great job, Bruce. All right, we will return in just a few moments, and now we're open until 20 past next hour, where we change up again and talk some basketball with Sam Amick. One sec, UCLA basketball, when we come back. What do you do with the three that were picked up for shoplifting in China? They have been suspended indefinitely, but what does that mean? Does that mean they'll be suspended until the weekend? 5 games, 10 games, 12 games, the out-of-conference schedule the entire year? We'll get into that. Also, some key matchups in the NFL I want to talk about. Cleveland-Jacksonville, for obvious reasons. The Bills and Chargers, really important game. Bob Griffin trying to talk his way back into the NFL. And I want to hit you up one more time about our podcast this week. Of all the podcasts we've done, I think this one's definitely the most unique and most fascinating. And I'll reset that in a few moments. Now, that's a professional radio tease. Lots to get done with half the show still left. But first, a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
If you need auto parts but you can't get to the store just yet, head over to O'ReillyAuto.com. No shipping costs, easy returns, and convenient pickup on your schedule. Shop your way for the parts you need at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Listen, I know I've hit this pretty hard, but I feel really strongly about this. Really strongly about this content and this episode of the podcast. And everybody who's heard this week's episode is blown away by it, because there's so much information that you didn't know about. I mean, you'd be blown away if you could hear the extent to what countries will cheat and how widespread the doping scandal was with Russia. So I'm out tomorrow, so I want to hit this one more time before the weekend. I need you to listen to the latest episode of the Jim Rome podcast. Do it, and trust me on this. I'm not going to say that I've got a favorite episode or a favorite guest, but I will say this. This, without question, is the most unique one we've done yet. It's going to be one that you least expect. I guarantee you're looking at this and you see the name Brian Fogel and you think, I don't really know that name. In fact, I don't know that name. And then you see what the topic is. Doping. International sporting scandal. And you're thinking, yeah, it's not really stick and ball. It's not football. It's not basketball. It's not even baseball. Yeah, Rome, I think I'll wait for your next guest. Don't do that. That would be a big mistake. Brian Fogel is the director and producer of the documentary Icarus. It's streaming now on Netflix. And it's an incredible look at inside of how the Russian Olympic doping operation was carried out and how widespread it was and how expansive it was. And trust me, you have no idea. You would never know that what you were watching, what transpired before you saw what you saw in the Olympics. You don't even know what you're watching. And that's what makes this doc so compelling. And that's why it's getting a lot of early Oscar buzz, because Brian documented the escape and confession of the scientist that carried out the operation and did so in real time. The doctor behind this whole thing is Gregory Rodchenkov. Brian Fogel told me that when the state-sponsored doping operation became public knowledge, Gregory fled Russia because he discovered that there was a plan that they were looking to have him killed.
What was clear to Gregory, as Russia was denying all the allegations, was that he believed that he was going to be essentially killed. And he had received information from other people at the FSB, the KGB. Others within that organization said, Gregory, they've planned your suicide. And within a period of literally 6 days between this report breaking to him hearing that they're going to essentially kill him, I help him get a plane ticket. He comes from Moscow to Los Angeles. I book the ticket for him. We get him to Los Angeles.
Are you hiding this guy at this point?
Yes. We've got him this little safe house in Santa Monica, like in the back of a garage. I didn't realize at that point how serious this was, how big it was. And as Gregory starts coming forward with the information and then showing the evidence, this is a scandal on unfathomable levels. Like, you can't believe it, how deep it goes, how big it was. And essentially, it was Russia cheating every single clean athlete on planet Earth for the last 40 years.
40 years?
Yes, and every single medal they ever won in every single Olympic Games across every single sport, they essentially had cheated and doped.
You think you might have some interest in listening to that? 1 hour of that. They've been doing it for 40 years. Every single athlete, virtually. And the guy that was behind it in recent years, the guy who put the whole plan together, quote, they had planned his suicide. When the story broke and they had to blame somebody, they were going to blame him and disavow any knowledge whatsoever and, as the theory goes, have him killed. So my guest, Brian Fogel, got him out of Russia and they hit him. So sports, politics, lies, alleged murder, cover-ups, scandal, international relations. This documentary's got it all, except it's all real. It all happened. It's all true. And the podcast goes really deep on all of it. So this weekend, in no particular order, you want to check out episode 13 of the Jim Rome podcast on iTunes or jimrome.com. And you want to check out Brian's film, Icarus. It's on Netflix. And I would love to get your thoughts on both. And so would he. So hit us up after you check out those two pieces of content. At Jim Rome, at Brian Fogel. Brian spells his name with a Y. And Fogel is spelled F-O-G-E-L. Trust me, you will be happy you did. It's time well spent. Don't be intimidated by how long it is. It does not feel like an hour at all. It is time well spent. At Fuller59 tweets, the Brian Fogel podcast was simply incredible. What an insane story. Can't wait to watch Icarus this weekend. Mikey Furlong tweets, Rome, absolutely riveting interview with Brian Fogel. I was hanging on every word. Long live the podcast. And Peter B. Hustis tweets, I listened to the Fogel podcast in the afternoon. I watched Icarus that night. Damn, Rome. This is sports media at its absolute finest. Keep it up. Pete, thanks. That tells me a lot, that he listened to an hour-long podcast, and the very same day he watched a two-hour documentary after hearing the one-hour podcast. That's how compelling that story is, and that's how compelling my guest is, Brian Fogel. So check that out. 1-800-636-8686. We're talking NBA. We're talking college basketball. The NFL weekend I want to get to as well. All of that still ahead. We go to Illinois. Darren in Illinois. Darren, nice to have you. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, Rome. Let's talk about some athletes that ain't cheating, huh? I'm calling because I'm pumped about the Bucks and your early favorite for MVP, the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Hey, has anyone ever touched on the length of this guy's arms? This cat can hug his family back in Greece before each game without leaving the couch. Romy, I was back home in Milwaukee this past summer for my nephew's birthday. Went out to the supermarket to get away from the wife, and what do you know? Bucks Car Wash featuring Giannis, Thonmaker, and John Henson. 46 cars done in 7 minutes. Shinier than Alvy's Chuck Taylor's. They even checked the tire pressure without having to walk around to the other side of the dang things. And last night, Romy, 16 block shots as a team against the Pistons. 16. Any Piston coming through the lane had to be thinking they were walking in the spider webs. No doubt. Anywho, Rome, next game is Saturday in Dallas. Many things to look forward to in that one, but my favorite will be the ref throwing Giannis an alley-oop straight up at center court to start the game. Or Giannis, John Henson, and Thon Maker celebrating a victory by playing a game of duck-duck-goose at midcourt without their buttholes ever leaving the floor. And war to USA seeing some antlers in the conference finals. I'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Rack him. I love this guy's brand. This guy's brand is long arm smack. That's not the first time he's come with something like that. Darren in Illinois. If I'm not mistaken, he made a call very similar to that one earlier this year, back in the spring.
Dude's arms are longer than the hiatus between smack-off callers dialing your number. Right, left, Wally, Vic, Jolene.
So he's done that before, except the first time he did it, it was good, but not nearly as good as it was when he just did it right there. Did he just say they could play Duck, Duck, Goose without getting up off their buttholes? That's how long their arms are? You know, they're not getting enough attention. We're talking so much about the West, the East. The Cavaliers off to a bad start. Celtics are killing it and doing so with Kyrie Irving. The Golden State Warriors are doing what they normally do. We're not talking enough about the Bucks. They're getting some run. They're getting some run here, but they're not getting enough run. So I'm glad that Darren in Illinois were to come in and give his guys some credit and talk about their great length. Anybody else? My man, you're on my watch list. That's not a good enough call in and of itself, or even the one back in the spring, to get you a golden ticket, but it was good enough to get on the watch list. You're on our radar. You're not there yet. This email, also about Icarus. I never thought that you clones would be that hyped on a documentary, but this thing is that compelling. Hey, Jim, I don't always have tons of spare time. Yes, you do, 12-wood. And you got more time than you know what to do with. What are you talking about? I don't always have lots of spare time. You got enough time to send me a bunch of bad emails and tweets. Bro, you got lots of time, Wood. Hey, Jim, I don't always have tons of spare time. I always check into the podcast. Due to timing at times, I will just listen to the VMs, then come back later to listen to the interviews. My intention last night was just to listen to the voicemails. I let it play through. The teaser hooked me. I listened to the podcast. Then I went to Netflix. I finished the movie at 2 a.m. I was blown away by it. Brian Fogel was looking for a piece of gold, and he wound up with the Count of Monte Cristo type treasure. Good interview, Jim. Signed, 12 Wood. War Wood Scopes. See, again, that's a great example. This guy said, I only went for the voicemails, and then I was going to double back for the interview. He got hooked by the tease. He listened to the whole interview, which is longer than any we've done so far, and then he went and watched the movie until the middle of the night. This is what I'm saying. Once you start in on this particular episode, you can't drop it. It's that compelling. Those clips that I played for you, like 90 seconds, 120 seconds, there are 60 minutes of that intrigue, and then the movie is 2 hours long, and it's just as good. It's amazing. Here's my man, Jesse in Konkin. Give Brian Fogel the Oscar now. No other documentaries need to be considered. Hashtag Icarus. Hashtag Jim Rome Podcast. Tells me a few things. Number one, he's got to get on the short list first. He explained the process to me off air. The Oscar process. You've got to get on the short list in order to get the nomination. And he's not on the short list yet, but it looks good. It's starting to look pretty good. And number two, I'll tell you something else this tells me. If you have a really compelling story, honestly, you'd be an idiot not to come around here. I mean, frankly, you'd be an idiot not to come around here. The podcast and the platform is that strong. Look at the reaction that he is getting by coming on our podcast. Publicists, managers, athletes, artists, be smart about this. Hour number three, straight ahead.